Gaya rautu matamba kunya vihari. Jambalamba, Idiododanti. Upi Janapalamba, Idiododanti. Sunan Anna Rajana Nanjana Sunan Anna Rajana Nanjana His divine grace, Avaya Chandana Bhaktivananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Kijaya, Iskan Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijaya. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindaki Jai Namachari Shukwirastakur Jai Prince Kahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sadvaita Gadadha Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopi Govinda Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Gauran Ki Jai Vrindavanam ki jai, Turidam ki jai, Navadeepdam ki jai, Jagannathaswami ki jai, Yamunamai ki jai, Srimati Lassi Devi ki jai, Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hare. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So today we're going to read from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, first chapter, text 10. And I'll explain why we're reading from this text a little later. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vraje vasam kem akaron madhupuryam cha keshavaha ratanam chavadit kamsa matur adhatat arhanam Rajeva Sankim Akaraho Madhupuriyam Chakeshavaha Rattaram Chavatit Kangsa Matur Adatad Arhana Rajeva Sankim Akaron Madhupuriyam Chakeshavaha Pataram Chavadit Kangsa Mathura Data Arhana Avrajeva Sanke Makaro Madhupuriyam Chakeshavaha Ataram Javadit Kongsang Matur Adata Darhanam
Jabit Kamsam.
Jabit Kamsam.
At Vrindavana, Vasan, while residing, Kim Akarot, what did he do? Madhapuryam, in Mathura, Cha, and Keshavaha, Krishna, the killer of Keshi. Ratana, the brother. Cha, and Adadit, killed. Kongsam, Kongsa. Matuhu, of his mother. Ada, directly. Atat Arhanam, which was not at all sanctioned by the Shastras. So translation. Lord Krishna lived both in Vrindavana and in Mathura. What did he do there? What? Someone say something. What did he do there? Why did he kill Kamsa, his mother's brother? Such killing is not at all sanctioned in the Shastras. So you can repeat. Lord Krishna lived both in Vrindavan and Mathura.
What did he do there?
Why did he kill Kongsa?
His mother's brother.
Such killing is not at all sanctioned in the Shastras. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. One's maternal uncle, the brother of one's mother, is on the level of one's father. When a maternal uncle has no son, his nephew legally inherits his property. Therefore, why did Krishna directly kill Kamsa, the brother of his mother? Maharaj Pariksit was very much inquisitive about the facts in this regard. So, Murajeva San Kim Akapo, Madhapuriam Chakeshavaha, Maratarang Chavadit Tong Sang, Maturadhatat Arhidam. So, Omaganati Midandesha, Gananjana Shlakya, Chatsur, Unmeditam, Dena, Tasmai, Shri Gurave Namaha. So here Maharaj Pariksit is addressing Sukadev Goswami. And previously in this particular chapter, there's a statement about, it's 10.14, about the benefit of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And the Vritta Tarsharupati Manan, the Vulture of Srocha Mano Viramat, Gautama Shloka Gunan Vada, Vana Puman Virajeta Vima Pushignat. And it's a very interesting statement made, and that's why we're hearing and chanting about Krishna. Nivritta Tarshar, that we're all experiencing misery in this material world, and this misery can be eliminated by the hearing and chanting of Krishna's glories. Nivritta Tarshar, we give on that. Bhavosharat Shrocha Mano Viramat. It's very pleasing to the mind, and it's very medicinal too. Bhavosharati. Gautama Shloka, in transcendental verses, Gunanavada, the Lord is being described, the qualities of the Lord are being described, and Puman Virajeta Vina Pashupnat, which means the only people who are not going to be attracted to that are killers of animals, animal killers. So, this is very interesting so far as preaching, but that's not what we're going to talk about today. So this is the benefit of hearing and chanting about Krishna's passions. And one of the first questions, which is very interesting, that Maharaj Pariksit raises is, why did he kill his uncle?
You know, it's completely improper. And this question, indirectly, implicitly, makes reference to one of the main reasons for Krishna's appearance, which we're going to be speaking about. Of course, there's basically two reasons for Krishna's appearance. Prichanaya Sadanam Vinashaya Jadushkutam. That's one of the reasons. I'm just combining them all into one reason. That Krishna comes to establish religious principles, annihilate the miscreants, and protect the devotees. I'm combining them, one reason. And there's another reason that Krishna appears, that which is more esoteric, that Krishna comes to enjoy rasa. Rasa means taste, mellows, as Prabhupada oftentimes translated that word. Mellows means different taste. So there are different direct rasas and indirect rasas which Krishna enjoys. The direct rasas, of course, are the Chandras, Dasharas, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, and Maturyaras. And for those of you who don't understand Sanskrit, that's the peaceful relationship. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. The servitor relationship, Jiveta Swarupa Hoy, Nitya Krishna Das. The friendship relationship, like Arjuna had. Parental relationship, like Yashoda Mai and Devaki have. And then finally, the conjugal relationship, which is the adhikar, or the right of the gopis of Vrindavan. So you have these five direct rasas, but to flavor the five direct rasas, there's the seven indirect rasas. And these seven indirect rasas are things like abhuta shock, or anger, or humor, ghastliness, chivalry, etc. And so Krishna comes to enjoy these different rasas. So one of the reasons he killed Kamsa, and we're going to talk about the esoteric reason first, is because he enjoyed a good fight. And not only Kamsa, but all of the different living entities that Kamsa sent to kill Krishna were very provided enjoyment for Krishna. Whether it's Putana, Trinavarta, Shankasura, Agasura, and we're simply reading about a few of the demons that Krishna killed. Actually, Krishna killed a lot more than that. We just get the real prominent ones. So Kamsa was basically employing an army of demons to attack Krishna. And he was giving Krishna enjoyment. Because Krishna, it gave him an opportunity to exhibit chivalry. Chivalry means that one shows his heroism and gets appreciated for it. Or shows his gentlemanliness. Just like it was this Sir Walter Raleigh who put up his cape for the Queen to cross the road when there was water in the road. So that one shows one's heroism. Because in order to be chivalrous, there has to be other people to watch you being chivalrous. Otherwise, it's not chivalrous. Otherwise, you're just having a good time for yourself. But chivalry means it's like a kshatriya business. So anyways, so Krishna enjoyed killing the demons because it was very chivalrous. Krishna enjoyed the ghastliness. Krishna enjoyed the anger when he was getting angry at the demons. So that's esoteric. But let's talk about the exoteric, which means, you know, Prajanaya, Sadhanam, Vinashaya, Chadustrutam. That is, Krishna comes to establish religious principles, Krishna comes to annihilate the miscreants, and protect the devotees. So I'm going to give the history of that, and it's quite an elaborate history, and it begins... The 10th canto, or Krishna's appearance in the 10th canto, begins with the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, surprisingly. Surprisingly, as it seems. Of course, the 9th canto has a lot of information about the family dynasties, too, in which Krishna appeared. But as far as the Prichanaya Sadunan, Vinashaya Chadushkritam business is concerned, the 8th canto has more information. So, let's start with the 8th canto, and we'll hear why Krishna killed Kamsa because Kamsa's last birth is very important, or several last births, and also why Krishna allowed the sons of his mother, who were called the Sudgarbhas, that means the six womb people. Garbha means womb. The six kids who were in the womb. Why Krishna allowed that to happen? I mean, sometimes people say, huh? How could there be a God? Why do all these unfortunate things happen in this world? Why is there terrorism? Why do people get sick? Why do people have car accidents? And why doesn't Krishna make this just like a beautiful place so there's no problems? So Krishna has a reason behind everything he does. So just looking at it from the external viewpoint, you may say Krishna allowed his mother and father to be in prison? Huh? What kind of God is that? Krishna allowed six kids to be killed? What kind of God is that? So we're going to describe why Krishna allowed that. And you have to understand the history to understand why Krishna allowed it. And everything that happens in this world is Krishna permitting it for a higher purpose. Now, why there? Let's say why there are demons now in America. Sorry about that. Or anywhere in the world. You know, people act demoniacally and do all sorts of things like that because there's free will. And Krishna. And also there's karma. You know, people suffer or enjoy due to past activities they perform in this world. I'm not going to get into all that. But let's just talk about why Krishna killed Kamsa and why Krishna allowed six sons of his mother to kill. So, let's start with the eighth canto. Once upon a time, there was Indra. He was riding on his elephant, very proud. And Durvasa Muni fits into Krishna's pastimes in many different places, into the Mahabharata in many different places. So once upon a time, he was riding on his elephant, and Durvasa Muni saw him, and Durvasa Muni thought, I will actually bless Indra and bless the demigods, and he gave him his mala, his garland. And Indra, he wasn't respectful towards Durvasa Muni. He took the garland, put it on his horse, on his elephant, sorry, Airavata. And Airavata just like threw it to the ground with his trunk, and he stomped on it. Now, you definitely don't want to do that with Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni got very upset and cursed the demigods. The demigods became very weak at that point, and the demigods lost to the demons. So when the demigods lose to the demons, or they have problems, who do they go to? No, they go to Lord Brahma first. Lord Brahma does, but you have to follow the proper etiquette. They go to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma and the demigods went to, and even Lord Shiva went to Lord Vishnu on Mount Samaru, and they went to Brahma on Mount Samaru, and then they went to Svetadvipa. Svetadvipa means the white island. It's basically the island in the Milk Ocean. So, then they got instruction from the Lord that you've offended a great devotee, so you're not going to become powerful now. So what you have to do is make a truce. As they say, if you can't join them, if you can't beat them, join them. Make a truce with the demons and do this thing of churning the Milk Ocean. And then you're going to get nectar, and then you're going to get more powerful. So to make a long story short, they went to the demons. The demons were headed at that time by Bali Maharaj. And they made a truce with the demons, and what happened is they decided to use Mandara Hill, to use the churning rod, and then Garuda had to bring Mandara Hill to there, and the Lord had to appear as the tortoise incarnation to hold the hill up. The Lord had to appear as a several thousand-handed Vishnu to hold it from the top. And the Lord had to appear as Ajita, another form of Lord Vishnu, to help the demigods pull their side. So there was this journey of the Milk Ocean, and I'm not going to tell the whole story of that. And different things came out. And eventually, after all these things came out, like Lakshmi and the poison that Lord Shiva took, then Dhanvantri, the medical incarnation of the Lord, came out with this amrit or nectar. And so he brought it out, and the demons, not upholding their end of the bargain, stole the nectar. Then what happens? The demigods pray to Lord Vishnu, we're in trouble, and Lord Vishnu appears as who? Anyone know? Mohini Murthy. See, Lord Vishnu is always saving the day when the demigods run into trouble due to their own lacking, their own disrespect to sages or offenses against devotees. Lord Vishnu has to appear to save them. So Lord Vishnu, at that particular juncture, cheated the demons, except for Rahu, of course, and took away the nectar and gave it to the demigods. So the demons at that particular point were really upset with this. And so they began to attack the demigods. And the demigods were actually overpowered by the demons in spite of having drunk the nectar. And then what happened is the demigods again took shelter of Vishnu. They had to keep taking shelter of Vishnu. And then there was more fighting. And there were several demons at this particular juncture. One's name is, of course, Bali, Kalanemi, Virpachiti, who later on became Jatasandha. And the demons were actually winning, but when Vishnu entered the arena, he killed Kalanemi with a trident, and Mali, Sumali, and Malyaban were killed with a disc of Lord Vishnu, and Bali Maharaj was actually knocked unconscious, practically dead. And Narada, trying to create more of a fight at that point, went to the demons and told them, hey, you're being beaten. You better join the fight. You know, the demons who weren't fighting at that particular juncture. So the demons attacked in force. There was a demon named Mamuchi. He's a very interesting demon. And this demon, Indra was attacking. Indra couldn't kill him because he had the benediction. He couldn't be killed by a wet weapon or a dry weapon. So finally, Indra heard the voice from the sky saying, kill him with foam. So Indra took a foam weapon and he killed this particular demon. And then so practically all the demons were dead at this point. And Brahma tells Narada Muni, send a message to the demigods. Don't kill all the demons. We need some of them around. The reason, demons are needed. So one may ask, you know, why are the demons needed? Demons are needed to help the demigods remember that they're servants of Vishnu. Because the demigods are generally Sakama devotees. Sakama devotees means that they have material desires. So when you have material desires, you get material opulence because of your devotional service. You develop anarthas. Actually, one of the final or most strongest anarthas that you can acquire are the anarthas that come from devotional service. Very interesting. How do you get anarthas from devotional service? Well, you get opulence, you get prestige, you get power, you get dhanam janam sundarim, whatever, from devotional service. And then you begin to think, I don't need Krishna anymore. Isn't it? Like you pray to Krishna, oh my dear Krishna, Swami Jaya Jagadishari, Swami Jaya Jagadishari. Anyway, and then you get money, and you say, oh Krishna, who's that? You forget, because Janmaishwarya Shrutasya Shubhir Edamana Adhapaman. As Queen Kunti prays, when you get opulence, Hare Krishna, when you get opulence, like mobile phones, when you get opulence, you forget. Opulence means money, wealth, intelligence, followers, attractive people from the opposite sex. You just get bewildered. Moha, illusion. So therefore, the demigods get bewildered, and they need demons to keep them on track, so that they will pray to Krishna. I mean, it's like all of us experience, when things are going well, we don't often pray to Krishna, at least I don't. It's just like, wow, things are going so well here, you know. Janmashtami is going well, you know. It's not going to rain. And all of a sudden it's going to rain. Uh-oh. Krishna, please save us. Vayimam, Rakshamam. Like that. And so when things go badly, then you tend to pray to Krishna more than when things go well. So, anyway, so almost all the demons were dead at this point, and the demigods stopped fighting because they were told by Narada Muni at the behest of Lord Brahma not to fight anymore. And Bali Maharaj was dead at that point. So then, this nice guru of the demons named, you know, what's his name? Shukracharya. Shukracharya, he had this Mrityu Sanjeevani. That means bringing someone back from Mrityu. Giving them life. And he had this special mantra. And he brought Bali Maharaj back from the death. And Bali Maharaj got stronger again because he was dedicated to his guru. That shows you, even if you have a demon guru, you should be dedicated to him. Not that you go back to Godhead, but you may become materially powerful. So he became so powerful that he defeated Indra. Because Indra was not so dedicated to his guru, he had offended his guru at this particular point. His guru's name was what? Ashpati. He offended his guru. So Indra lost his potency. So Bali again took over the heavenly planets. Then Aditi, that is the mother of Indra, thought, I gotta save my son. So that's why mother is very important, because she can save you. So she, at the behest of her husband, she began to perform this Payuvrata. And as a result of this Payuvrata, who was born?
Vamanadeva
was born. Wow. What'd you say? He's great. He's the future of Krishna consciousness. He's the reason we started the school. And the other boys and girls. So what happened is that Vamanadeva came, and we know he pulled his tricks. Shukracharya was very upset. Shukracharya said, you should not, Bali Maharaj, you should not give him 3 steps of land. And Shukracharya made himself really small to interfere with the water pot, and Lord Vamanadeva poked his eye out. That's why you see Shukracharya like this all the time. One eye, he's blinded in one eye, and that's why he's very angry. He even got angry at Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. We told that story the other day. So, at that point, Bali Maharaj gets defeated by Lord Vamanadeva, sent down to Sutala, and the demons are pretty much in check at that point, but there's a lot of demons who don't agree with Bali Maharaj. They want to again attack the demigods. So in order to attack the demigods, they have to regroup. In other words, they have to get their forces together, get trained up again, and they have to figure a place where they can hide from the demigods for some time. So they look at a planet in the universe. That planet is known as what planet? What planet do the demons take shelter of? Earth. Because they're looking, this is the one place, it's, you know, inconsequential planet, according to the demons. And of course, we think it's very consequential. We think it's the only place where there's life in the whole universe. Kind of stupid. Even though Krishna says, Sarvagata, there's living entities everywhere. So we're thinking this is the center of the universe, this Earth planet. And we're thinking America is the center of the Earth. And we're thinking the Hillsborough is the center of America. And we're thinking that the temple is the center of Hillsborough, and we're thinking that I'm the center of the temple. Anyway, so Prabhupada told the story. It's a very interesting story where Prabhupada was cutting down the false ego of one disciple one time. I guess we could mention his name. It was a Prabhupada story. Tamal Krishnamaraj. Tamal Krishnamaraj was thinking, you know, I can control everything. So Prabhupada was talking about the same point, that there's many planets and many universes, many planets, and there's one insignificant planet Earth, and many on Earth there's one country, America, and in America there's many cities, and one city is Los Angeles, in Los Angeles there's many streets, and that's Waseca Avenue, and which is where the temple was. And in that street there's many houses, and in street there's many houses, one of the houses is the temple. And in the temple there's many people, and there's one person in the temple, his name is Jamal Krishnamars, and he thinks he's the supreme controller. So Prabhupada was chastising in a sarcastic way. Getting back to the story. So the demons, they took shelter on this insignificant planet, which is the Earth planet. And they took shelter by taking birth as Kshatriyas. So that's the beginning of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the sense that the Kshatriyas, or the demons, had invaded all the dynasties on the Earth planet, and except for the Yadav dynasty. All the other dynasties, like we mentioned before, in Magadha, you had Jarasandha. Jarasandha was so powerful, and his birth was quite interesting too. Anyone remember what his birth was? What was his birth?
Like there was his father, and then Jarasandha wanted to carry his mother to two pieces, so they threw each into two pieces.
Yes.
That's right. So then there was a demon in Jarasandha, and came, and then he picked up both pieces, and then it magically turned into a baby, and then she called it Jarasandha.
Yeah. Yes, so if you didn't hear, that was a very good explanation. That the king of Magadha, he wanted a child, and basically he went to the sage and said, "I want a child." And said, "You're not supposed to have a child, but I'll arrange it. You can have a child. So here's this kheer. That's the standard way. So be careful when you drink kheer." So anyway, so here's this kheer, and each of his wives took part of the kheer, and each of his wives, he had two wives, gave birth to half a baby. And when they saw half a baby, you know, cut right down the middle, they thought, ugh, disgusting. They threw both halves in the garbage, and this witch called Jada, she saw these two halves, joined it, she was playing with it, she was going to eat them first, because she's a witch, and she was playing with them, put them together, and became Jarasandha. She gave Jarasandha. Jarasandha means the witch Jara, who Jara means old age, actually. It's a standard name for witches, old one. So the person who the witch Jara put together, Jarasandha. Understand? So anyway, Jarasandha, he was Viprachiti, this demon who was killed by Lord Vishnu. And then, of course, Kamsa, he was Kalanemi, another demon who was killed by Lord Vishnu. So that explains, first of all, why Krishna killed his uncle. Because he actually, even though he was externally his uncle, he was a demon that had taken birth to harass people on the earth and also to get the demons' power together so they could attack the demigods again. That explains that. So, let's explain why Krishna allowed these six sons of his mother to be killed by Kamsa. This is another very interesting story that involves the past. So, this also involves Kalanemi again. And also involves the six sons of Marici, the great sage. Marici, he had six sons. Stage. And these six sons were actually quite pious individuals in the beginning. And these six sons, they saw Lord Brahma at the time of basically one of the episodes in the creation. Lord Brahma had a little bit of a challenge. I don't know if I should describe what the challenge was, kind of embarrassing. But anyway, He did something that was not kosher. Or, for those of you from India, cricket. He did something that was not cricket, kosher, or proper. And these six sons of Manichi, they laughed at Lord Brahma. And you definitely don't want to laugh at Lord Brahma. And so, therefore, they got cursed to become the sons of a demon. Or demons. Whoops. They got cursed to become the sons of a demon. So, first of all, they became the sons of Hiranyakashipu. Then later on, they became the sons of Kalanemi. This demon. Remember the demon that became Kamsa? They became the sons of Kalanemi. Then, what happened, as the sons of Kalanemi, who happened, Kalanemi happened to be, or they were the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu. Okay? As the sons of Kalanemi, they were the grandchildren of Hiranyakashipu. Got it? Everybody understands that? And so they did something that really aggravated Hiranyakashipu. What did they do? They worshipped Lord Brahma. Even though Hiranyakashipu had worshipped Lord Brahma, he had become so powerful that he forgot his benefactor, Lord Brahma, and got very upset because they were worshipping Lord Brahma, these six sons of Kalanemi, the grandchildren of Hiranyakashipu. They were worshipping Lord Brahma in order to become immortal. And they got the benediction they couldn't be killed by demigods or demons or rakshasas or whatever it is. And Hiranyakashipu got so angry with them, he cursed them that later on you will be killed by your father. That's Kalanemi. Remember that? And so, because they were cursed like that, when they took birth as Devaki's children, they were actually killed by their previous father, Kalanemi, who had taken birth as Kamsa. So that's why Krishna allowed that to happen. And later on, incidentally, after they were killed, after Krishna killed Kamsa, you know, Krishna appeared, Krishna killed Kamsa, then Krishna saved them. He brought them back from the dead. And then they became purified and great pure devotees. And the way they became purified is very interesting. Is that they drank the breast milk from Mother Devaki. Now, the breast milk from Mother Devaki is very interesting because that milk is Mahaprasadam. Why is it Mahaprasadam? Because Krishna personally drank from the breast of Devaki later on, in the beginning. And then it was Krishna's remnant. So they became purified and great devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the background of why these six garbhas or sadgarbhas were killed, and also why Kamsa was killed by Krishna. So that's complete background. So let's say we'll tell more of the story about, let's see, what other points do we have to tell about the story about Krishna's appearance. So, of course, when Krishna appeared, he appeared in Mathura. However, the acharyas describe that Krishna actually appeared in Vrindavan, especially this one great acharya, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, states that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Of course, that statement is there from Shastra. Goloka eva nivasati akilatma bhuta. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, although he's all expanded. He's everywhere through his different incarnations and through his energies. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So, we understand, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that Krishna in his original form was born as the son of Yashoda Mai and Nanda Maharaj. And Krishna and his expansion, his Vishnu expansion, was born as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So later on, when Vasudeva brought Krishna to, and the same thing happened with Balaram, we talked about this the other day, that Balaram actually was born originally from Rohini, and Devaki had an expansion of Balaram who appeared in her womb, which was transferred by Yogamaya to Vrindavan, to Rohini, and that expansion entered, or as we say, merged, for lack of a better word, with the original Balaram in Vrindavan. And the same thing happened with the original Krishna and the expansion of Krishna that appeared from the womb of Devaki and Vasudeva. So anyway, so Vasudeva and Devaki had the expansion of Krishna. It's called Vasudeva Krishna. Actually, there's two words. There's Vasudeva and Vasudeva. The word Vasudeva refers to the father of Krishna, and Vasudeva refers to Krishna, the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam we say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We don't say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, Vasudeva brought Krishna through the storm. That's why traditionally on Janmashtami there's storm, lightning, thunder, and everything like that. He brought Krishna through the storm to Braj, and that expansion of Krishna, the Vasudeva Krishna, merged into Brajendra Nandana, Krishna and Vrindavan. And then Krishna was brought up by Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and had all of his various pastimes. We described the other day how Krishna had different, I don't know if I have this here. Actually, I wanted to talk about this. Let's see if I actually brought it with me. Yes. How Krishna had different pastimes, I won't get into that, at different times of the day. In the morning, of course, waking up. The first pastime of the day, let's see, what are the actual times here? I think I might. Where Krishna wakes up and goes to meet. Yeah. I don't have the actual time. It's called the end of night, which is called the Pratima Yama. Rat Yanta, which means the end of the night. And then Krishna goes to meet, Krishna wakes up, sorry. Krishna and Srimati Radharani, they're in the bowers and they're woken up. And Krishna rushes home to not be discovered as missing by his mother Yashoda, and Radharani does the same thing. Unfortunately, Krishna puts on Radharani's cloth, and Radharani puts on Krishna's cloth, and Yashoda Mai is just like really bewildered why Krishna is wearing blue, and Radharani's mother is upset why Radharani is wearing yellow. So they get in a little trouble, but they're able to explain why that is so, and Krishna says, of course, that Balaram's clothes are what he's wearing. Then the next time of the day is what's called Dvitiya Yama Praga, which is the morning time, and Krishna wakes up, or apparently wakes up, he's been up the whole night, and he's given his bath, he's given food to eat, and his friends come and join him. The next time of the day is called the forenoon, that means right before noon. It's called the Tritiya Yama. And then Krishna goes out to herd the cows or the calves and play with his cowherd boyfriends. And next time of the day is called Chaturtha Yama, Madhyana, which means midday, in which Krishna meets with the gopis, actually. Generally, at this particular time of the day, it's Surya Kund. Surya Kund is the place where Surya Dev is worshipped, And in this particular location, there's many pastimes that occurred where Krishna and Madhu Mangal, they act like Brahmins who are performing the Surya Puja and trick the gopis. And of course, Madhu Mangal is tricking the gopis to giving what? Ladus. Because Madhu Mangal likes ladus so much. One time the gopis, when Krishna and the coward boys were stealing butter, the gopis caught Madhu Mangal because he couldn't fit out through the window because he was a little heavier than most of the other coward boys. And the gopis were beating Madhu Mangal, and Krishna said that you've offended a Brahmin. And because you've offended a Brahmin, you have to go and apologize to him and do whatever he says. And they went to Madhu Mangal and he said, feed me ladus. And after they fed him like 1,000 ladus, then he blessed them instead of being angry with them. So that these pastimes happen generally in the middle of the day. And then in the afternoon, which is called the Panchama Yama, then there's more pastimes with the coward boys. And the sixth time of the day is called the Shasti Yama, which is the evening Sayam, or Shayanam, actually, which is the evening, and Krishna has more pastimes with the gopis at that point, and then he goes back home, and apparently goes to sleep. And then Saptama Yama, which is the late evening, that's when Krishna sneaks out, and when his parents are not looking, Krishna sneaks out to join the gopis. And then you have the Ashtama Yama, finally Ratri, the night where Krishna is with the gopis and acting the rasa dance and the different pastimes in the Yamuna. So this is Krishna's daily activities. Krishna has a regular schedule every day. So, any questions or comments? We have 5 minutes left. We can take some questions about Janmashtami, the reason for Krishna's appearance, the esoteric reasons, or the exoteric reasons. Questions or comments? Someone must have some questions. What's that?
Like you said that there are five important rasas.
Five important rasas. Yeah.
So Madhuri Ras contains all the other five rasas. Is like that?
Yes. Well, let us say Madhurya Ras contains all the essential qualities of the five rasas. I wouldn't say that Madhurya Ras contains all the qualities, because certainly in Madhurya Ras, then there's no, let us say, interaction with Krishna in awe and reverence, at least Madhurya Ras in Vrindavan. In other words, the gopis, or the coward boys generally, they're not interacting with Krishna in awe and reverence. They're interacting with Krishna as their friend. And even Arjuna, you know, he forgets that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know. And he describes in the Gita to Krishna, after he understands that Krishna is God, he says, forgive me for lying on the same bed with you, joking with you, and being too familiar. But the essential quality of all the rasas is servitude. Except pure Shantaras, this is described by the Acharyas. Some Acharyas say pure Shantaras is not in Braj. The Shantaras has to be mixed with some dasha to be in Braj, because that's the constitutional position. Shantaras basically means to appreciate the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But pure Shantaras, some Acharyas say pure Shantaras is almost like impersonalism. You know, God is great. So you have to have some dasha mixed in. Does that make sense? But everybody in all of us, they're all servants of Krishna. So any other questions or comments? Or problems or requests? Yes.
Were the six siblings that were killed also representations of Anartha's?
Yes, they're also representations of Anartha's. Kama, Grota, Madhumatsarya, Vadiyabhaya, lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. And it's also, the Acharyas, thank you for bringing that up, the Acharyas also mentioned that in order to have Krishna manifest, one has to conquer these anarthas. Very good. Very good. Thank you very much for that. That's something I forgot in my discussion. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Yeah. When things like that were seen to be petty things, especially amongst the devotees, when petty things seem to happen, is it because Krishna, this is his character, this is his domain, this is his spiritual place. He never wants to leave this place. He doesn't want out here in society, he wants right here. So when something happens here, something that seems to be petty, is actually him being a teacher. He allowed it to happen only to teach the devotees.
Well, sometimes it's our fault too.
We can't
just say Krishna allowed us to have this argument today so we can learn a lesson. I mean, maybe I was at Maya. You know, like, we always give the example that of devotees having a car accident and devotees saying to Prabhupada, it was Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada said, no, it wasn't Krishna's mercy, it was your foolishness. So we can't really blame Krishna for everything. Or attribute everything to Krishna's interaction. Krishna allows things to happen because Krishna gives us this free will. But as far as our foolishness being a lesson from Krishna, no. The reaction we get from our foolishness, that may be a reaction, a lesson from Krishna. But we have to be very careful not to attribute to Krishna every aspect of our actions. Generally, I tell people that those things that you have no control over, you know, like the weather, I attribute that to Krishna because I have no control over the weather. But if I, due to my inadequacy or, you know, inattentiveness, let's say can't hear my rounds, I don't attribute that to Krishna. I attribute that to my own problem, my own fault. So we have to be careful in that regard. So, any other questions? We're supposed to greet the deities now.
Yeah, with the emotions, I know every thought, intention, goal, or action we undertake is covered. It's affected by our emotions.
Yeah.
To the end or the negative ones. And that's, like I said, every thought, intention, goal, or action is affected by our emotions. We have no choice in this
offer, right? Choice? We always have the choice to surrender to Krishna. Manchiyo vyabhicharena. Bhakti yogena sevate. Sagunan samadhichaitan pramukhuyayacha kalpate. We have this intelligence that's been given by Krishna. So we don't have to succumb to the urges of the senses or the mind. Does that make sense? Thank you. All glorious through divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Krishna Janmashtami ki jai.